We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter. This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. As we hit record on today's show, we are about 48 hours removed from the firing of Gerson Rosas and less than 72 hours away from the introductory press conference of Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry, which is just a crazy sentence right there. Not great timing for that, but that press conference is only the beginning of Monday. After A-Rod and Lowry and Glenn Taylor all talk, then we have the introduction of Sachin Gupta, the new president of basketball operations, or the Gerson Rosas replacement. Carl's going to talk, which we'll see how that goes. D'Angelo Russell will probably be like mysterious. Anthony Edwards will probably be hilarious. All of that is what's kind of looking forward here for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Also, Ben Simmons showing up at Media Day on Monday will be interesting. That's looking forward as well. But for today's podcast, we're going to look backwards. Andy Grimsrud, who you all probably know better as at PD Wolves on Twitter from punchdrunkwolves.com, is here to talk to me today about the article he wrote. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Dane, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's like Wednesday was crazy, but now I feel like we're in this little Timberwolves worldwide. We're in this little middle zone where it's that happened. What's next? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like yeah, right there.
We've had a few of these things happen of different sorts, right? And it's amazing how the world moves on.
Right. Well, I mean, we've known each other since 2018, I guess, something like that. And it's just crazy. We've sat next to each other at games for many years. And it is funny to just, as I was kind of doing with Britt on the last podcast of, I mean, this one's different, but this isn't our first time of like, oh, here comes chaos, you know, or here is chaos. There's been a lot of that in these 3 years.
For sure. Yep. No, there's been, Tibbs being fired right after a big win over the Lakers. That one's not too far in time. Oh, well, how about Ryan Saunders getting fired and then getting a permanent head coach put in about it, 45 minutes later is like the storm of activity that was. And you could just go back in time. There's been all kinds of craziness.
So many.
Jimmy Butler's trade demand. Kevin Love's trade demand. I mean, it's rarely boring.
I wonder like how much Sachin Gupta actually has his head wrapped around like all of the dysfunctional things that have happened here, like pre his time. I mean, there's been a lot in the past 3 years, but I wonder if he truly like gets knuckle push-ups and Joe Smith and all those sort of things. Cause this is sadly for Timberwolves fans, nothing new at all.
Not at all. No.
So Andy wrote, Andy's one of my favorite Timberwolves writers out there. And he wrote a really, you're in a position, Andy, as a blogger where it's like, what I love about reading you is it's no punches pulled ever in your writing or on Twitter. And it's something that brings, I think, a very, different perspective to the Timberwolves media space, and it's, you know, it's your opinion, and based in, you know, being around the team, watching the team, obviously all those things, being in the locker room, press conferences, all that. And it's cool because I respect where you're coming from, yet oftentimes find myself disagreeing with where you're at. And I think if there's one thing, you know, it's for the two of us where we've been, you know, going back to kind of the beginning of the Rosas time where I've been like, man, I don't know. I'm not seeing this the way Andy's seeing this. And you're probably thinking the same thing on me. So what better time than for you to come on after Gerson Rosas has been fired. But I thought the thing that really stood out to me as I was reading your piece today was that, like, you were out on Gerson Rosas from day one. And I think that part was like, is very unique.
I would maybe say like day like 15. I was out on him as I didn't trust him or feel as if he was owed a benefit of the doubt, so to speak, which I think is maybe a term that people give new coaches, new presidents of basketball, is, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt, let him build his team. I was kind of out on that benefit of the doubt concept after the Ryan Saunders announcement and the way that it was carried out.
Right. That's what stood out to me.
Yeah.
Which is a good point.
And I'm sorry to kind of interrupt you right out of the jump, but I was actually, I think I was pretty happy with the hire when it was announced, you know, this guy who comes from the Maury tree, like moving on from Thibodeau. I mean, I like Thibodeau, of course, but I didn't want to hire a bad president of basketball to be the next guy. I mean, I wanted to get someone good. I still liked a lot of our players, obviously. And I wanted it to be a good, successful transition. And I thought Rosas had the resume for that. But, you know, they announced the interviews of a bunch of kind of intriguing coach candidates, new guys, you know, young guys like Juwan Howard and David Vanterpool. Chris Finch. I mean, these are guys who would fit the bill of like first-time NBA head coaches. They all have diverse backgrounds of, you know, either playing professionally like Howard and Vanterpool had, or Finch had kind of done the like 20 to 25 year grind of, you know, coaching, head coaching here, assistant coaching here, been around the world. I'm quickly hijacking this whole pod and
This was stood out to me.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, we had the months long little steady drumbeat of news reports, whether it be from John Krasinski or Mark Stein or Adrian Woj, warning us that Ryan Saunders was expected to be the head coach before Gerson Rosas was even a thing. And so all the dots are connecting to Ryan's taken care of by Glenn or whoever is in Glenn's close circle. You know, you might know that better than me, but Glenn's people had Ryan situated to be the coach before they had chosen a president. And when he was interviewed to be president, Ryan was a part of that process. Now, I don't think he interviewed him, but he was around him when he was here. And it's like,
yeah,
don't then come when you get the job with this forceful rebuke of, you know, voices like mine who are questioning it. Like, just, there's an easy way to present Ryan as the coach if you're Rosas, and it's emphasizing continuity and just kind of saying, you know, look, obviously he has a position here. And, you know, instead it was like this kind of like,
which would have been fair. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't have been happy with it, but it's the reality and it's the justification, as opposed to this notion that he's emphasizing that he's like the best candidate possible for the job. And I'm like, come on, like that was too much. So I was sensing kind of salesmanship at an unlikable level on a sensitive issue for my fandom and what I had hoped to see happen. I'm like, he was like twisting the knife and it was real irritating. And so doesn't mean I didn't try to give him a fair shake on things that transpired after that. I continue to say, I love the 2020 draft picks, Ant and Jaden McDaniels, which he was entirely responsible for getting. Real happy with that. I'm excited about this team's future, you know, maybe 2 to 3 years down the road from now, or maybe, you know, whatever, but as far as being like in or out on Rosas, yeah, I took a negative turn early. And I think for me,
it was like, yeah, you know, you got the, I guess I was more so just intrigued by the idea that this is going to be a modern general manager, president of basketball operations, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, is going to, what is my personal belief is like to have success, you know, in the, I don't know, this decade, right?
Yeah.
The old school GMing probably has a ceiling to it, or at best has a ceiling to it. At worst is just not gonna, you know, it's just not going to work. And I was more in the camp, probably caught up in the moment of a lot of the dysfunction of the end of the Thibodeau era of like, okay, I think that's what Tibbs and Layden were. You know, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, it Gerson Rosas is Daryl Morey, as you said, all those sort of things. Like, I believe in modern roster construction and these sort of things. Winning on the margins, I think, is how you do it. And so I think blind, I don't know if the word's blinded, but it's funny in hindsight, you know, you lay that all out there with Saunders and we know what happened with Ryan. He ended up not being a very strong coach. And you're like, I don't know. It's funny in this like business where you go, all right, I missed that one. You know, like, why did I miss it? But it kind of, but that is why you miss things, is because you believe in something else, right? Like you believe the positives outweigh the negatives potentially of that. And so I was just kind of like ready to roll with it, even if I thought that, you know, Ryan's tenure might be temporary. But then I think as time went on, it kind of became a little bit more clear. And like, and by time went on, like maybe like we talk a year, mm-hmm. you just kind of started to hear more things that like Chris Finch is his guy. Yeah. And I would say a year before Ryan was fired, I was saying here that I think the next coach of the Timberwolves is going to be Chris Finch.
Yeah.
And it just, I think that's what probably kind of rubs me the wrong way in hindsight is like, you know, Ryan was just kind of put up here to like take the axe of the necessary tanking years. Well, yeah. You might push back on the necessary tanking years part of it, but like it was going to be somewhat bad at the beginning, right? They had all these contracts they had to get rid of. They had to kind of maybe tank to get a good pick in, you know, in some sort of ways to rebuild. And that was just going to carry a lot of losing. And if Chris Finch would have came in right away at the beginning, which might have been Gerson's preference from the beginning, then, you know, then he's wearing that backpack of what, 92 L's, right? Rather than Ryan having them and then you cut that off and here's Chris now, like with a kind of fresh start at a time when the team is like, quote unquote, about to take off. So that part rubbed me wrong. And you know, that's a lot of that is perception too, but that's where kind of my head was at with it.
Yeah, no. And the Ryan being kind of set up to fail thing is, even though I pretty vocal, or you know, whatever Twitter fingers are, they're not vocal, but I've been kind of forceful and being anti everything about the Ryan Saunders getting the permanent head coaching job. I didn't mind him getting the interim job. I thought that made enough sense, but I do think there's something to that notion that maybe he was set up to fail, and that, to get more grand conspiratorial, and it may factor into the extent to which he was given Ryan as a part of the deal, as opposed to him truly independently picking, right. You know what I mean? Like, let's just say hypothetically, I'm right that Glenn Taylor applied some level of pressure where Rosas felt, I'm getting this job, but maybe, you know, I'm getting it in part because I'm playing along with the coaching situation.
Well, kind of like the same thing as A-Rod and Laurie right now too, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's kind of like some, you got to play along with Glenn.
You got,
his absolutely 2020 sort of thing. And you got to, but you got to write stuff down on paper and handshakes and all that. Yeah.
But I think, like, that's, let's a part say, of Glenn. If it was part of the, if Ryan was a quasi mandatory term of getting the job, well, maybe then Rosas in the back of his mind is thinking, well, this isn't the guy I would have necessarily hired, or it's flat out not the guy I would have hired. I would have hired Chris Finch, my guy from Houston, and I'm going to hire him. And in order to make that happen, maybe there needs to be a little short term pain. So maybe I just won't get a power forward. Maybe I'll give ours to Phoenix, even though he makes about $1 million. No, you know, he had one more year of cheap salary. It wasn't an imminent salary move the way some of those might have been more salary.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the moves, because you went through that. extensively in your article, and you did highlight, you know, as you just said, 2020 draft was a hit. Then, you know, other things on the margins, you know, Naz Reid, Jordan McLaughlin, stuff like that, undrafted. Chris Finch, you know, was a success there too. But I think like the Saric move at the time, before we even knew Jarrett Culver was going to be bad, was really like what you felt about that move. What that kind of created, right, the bifurcation between the Tibbs people and the Rosas people, right? Like, because you're, I guess I could just let you say your own vision, but I'm kind of over here like, oh yeah, right, this is executive on the margins. Like, it's not, you know, you're trading Dario Saric, who you're probably not going to bring back, to move up to six to be able to get, you know, your guy. Like, that doesn't seem like too high of a price. Whatever. Again, semi-blinded like I am. Whereas you're on the other side here being like, you know, Dario Saric is a pretty good player, right? And if you have to pay Dario Saric in a year, that probably means he's worth it, right?
Yeah. I kind of view Dario as like in football, like a solid, like a starting offensive guard or something. It's like, you're not going to pay him a huge salary, and no one really cares that much about him. But if he's injured or he's gone, like, you got to replace him functionally. And if you don't, you're going to lose. Like, it's not about him as much as kind of what he represented, that being like a capable NBA veteran starter at a clear starting position who has won games. And like, when you gut the roster of like all of the guys who all the guys who meet that description, Taj Gibson, Tyus Jones, Dario Saric, Robert Covington was kind of replaced in a way, I guess, Derrick Rose, they're all replaceable, but none of them were replaced. And that would be the best. That'd be the best way I can put it. They were like in those spots, you had Jordan McLaughlin, Naz Reid. I mean, the next year, of course, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, like we were excited about those guys, but all of this comes in the context of, what I wrote, and I kind of wrote more directly last year, which is like, he didn't come in for Towns's rookie year or second year or third year or, I mean, it was his fifth year he was starting, I think, when Rosas came.
Yeah, that would have been fifth year.
Yeah, like I was looking back on it because David Kahn came in when Kevin Love – David Kahn and Kevin Love famously clashed, and it was obvious to anyone paying attention, to people who know things, that Kahn didn't properly value Love when he took over. He might have even shopped him for trades. Anthony Randolph's the name people bring up. I don't know if that's true or not. Zach Harper probably knows. But Kahn and Kevin Love is a relationship where a GM takes over and like, okay, guts the whole team except Kevin Love, gets rid of Al Jefferson, you know, gets rid of Randy Foy, gets rid of Mike Miller. Like, he's going to gut the team and build it around Love, except Love was 1 year into his career at that point. You can do that when your prize asset is just out of high school 2 years. Like, Karl Towns was a 4-year vet who was soaring upward of like, you know, best player to build around, all NBA in his third year in the league, you know, playoffs. And then like, okay, he hits a hiccup. Him and Jimmy famously don't get along. He doesn't get along with Tibbs. And then it doesn't go well. And you're not at a position to just blow it up from scratch. Like, you can't. And why I called it a half measure is that he kind of thought he could keep Towns, keep this thing on the Towns timeline, have Towns be like his prize player, but also like disregard the concept of winning. And, you know, if you have a good coach, and I do think Ryan's inadequacies are irrelevant here, because I do think like someone like Chris Finch, if you give him, you know, give him like some combo of the Teague, Tyus, Derrick Rose, you know, trio, keep some of that happening at the point guard. And then you got like Wiggins, Rocco, Dario, Cat, whatever. Like, I think someone like Chris Finch or another good NBA coach takes a team like that with like Towns, Covington, Saric, Wiggins played his worst ball under Ryan at times and some of his best actually, but I think they could win 40 plus games if the stars align. Like, maybe they wouldn't win 40, but if things went well, I could.
Right, I get you.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a roster. That's just crap. It's like a lot. Like, you got guys who've made all star teams, guys who've made all defensive teams. But instead, Rosas gets rid of like all the veteran support around Towns and Wiggins. And to be fair to like whatever, I don't know what I'm. Wiggins like truly played horribly toward the end of his Minnesota run there. Like he was checked out. Like it's the worst I've ever seen him look. I don't know.
I think like what's interesting. It's a good line where you say like a bunch of players that just weren't replaced, like replaceable players that weren't replaced. And what ended the replacement ended up being like specifically for Dario, but the replacement for Dario Saric as the starting power forward next to Kat was Robert Covington, who was the starting small forward at the time. And I remember that night at the draft, like there was literally no power forwards on the roster, which turned out to be a theme of the entire Rosas regime.
Yeah.
But I remember like, remember how that trade had gone down. So Rosas couldn't really talk about it. Like, right. We had to wait for a while until the Saric deal and the Culver, like Culver couldn't play in summer league, all that.
Oh yeah.
So I'm trying to like ask a question that's about the power forward position that he can answer. And I don't remember exactly how I framed it, but his answer was, well, Robert Covington's best position, is as a power forward. So that is what kind of triggered it all off for everyone that were like, okay, this is the framework of the roster now where it's going to be a little bit, it's going to be, you know, small ball with Kat and Rocco in the front court, you know, Wiggins there, we'll figure out the, you know, kind of the guards over time. And that was the framework. And that's really when I started, I remember at media day, that first media day, the whole messaging was all just like, small ball, small ball, small ball. And I remember what I wrote that day was just like, I remember coming home from it and just going through the league, right? You just do the depth charts thing. And I think it was like, I split the teams up into like massive, like medium, like size, right? And then small. And I had 13 teams, not all of which were good, but like 13 teams that were like massive, where it was like, it's like Andre Drummond and Kevin Love together in Cleveland. Like that's a big front court, you know? And it just was, I don't know if I was like waving the red flag at that time, but I like right away, like put a pin in it where I was like, are we sure that going like this small with Kat not being massive himself,
right,
it is going to actually work. But again, myself included, Rosas is new. This is working on the margins, a new sort of team, like, small ball's kind of in vogue. Like I was skeptical, but I'm like, okay, like, let's see how it works. Maybe they'll get bigger in time. Right. Or maybe they'll test it out and they'll see how it works. And then kind of the rest is history in that Rocco didn't work as a four, right? Defensively. It didn't. Well, I mean, I'm not saying Covington's a bad defender, but they did not defend well with Kat and Covington together in the front court.
Right. Yeah. I would probably underestimated the potential of Rocco at the four. I remember when I was kind of early on kind of writing it off, I had people on Twitter, like sharing like, you know, stats from this or that website telling me he's always played the four, played a lot of it. And I'm like, oh, okay, well maybe I got that wrong. Right. But I think what you touched on was a bigger part too. Like Kat's not a big center. And so you're going small center, small four. And then like our threes are not guys who play particularly big. Like you don't have like those
like Wig is big, but like not strong necessarily. Yeah. Like
you'd want to have like an Al-Farouq Aminu or a Jonathan Isaac or you know, someone of that ilk like a Sean Marion or something, or like a Jaden McDaniels, like that.
Sure.
You'd want some guys like that in the mix and the wing positions to sort of collectively add a little collective length.
Trevion Graham.
Yeah.
Who else? You got Jake Layman.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It wasn't, there wasn't a lot of guys who were like going to give a little extra boost to the whole situation, you know, fly in for tip balls and stuff and make it a little more like gang rebounding. It was just sort of, just to get smaller. Well,
it failed miserably.
Yeah.
It failed miserably, whatever it is. And it's like, it remains the biggest question mark with this team, right? Like, can you defend with Karl Anthony Towns?
Yeah.
And I guess the glass half full is what we learned in that time is you probably can't defend with Karl Anthony Towns as your center if the rest of your roster is small.
Yeah.
What I think we don't know is can you defend with Karl Anthony Towns as your center if you have a little bit more size and strength at the four and throughout, you know, throughout the rest of your rotation in that sort of way. Like, we can't necessarily prove that with the Tibbs era either, because that wasn't a good defensive team either.
Were they really good with, I forget, because, you know, it's, we have to like pluck 10 game samples of each season to remember when it, the defense was there.
I think, but I know where you're going.
Well, you might know. Like, I think there was a stretch when Sarge and Rocco showed up.
Is they were awesome.
Right? They were defending really well, and they had the
11 games.
Yeah, okay.
11 games after the Butler trade.
That's one.
And I think they went 8-3 over that time, and they were third in defense in the league over that time. And that's what really triggered for me, as a lot of people listen to this know, like, I've been like super anti for a long time. Like, I don't think you can play a conservative defensive scheme with Cat as your center, again, for the size and all that.
Yeah.
But to Tibbs' credit, like, everyone thinks about Tibbs as, like, you know, whether it's Joakim Noah or now Nerlens Noel, all this, like, super conservative, drop your center back, whatever. To Tibbs' credit, and I think why they went 8-3, it was like, and some people, if you're watching the Timberwolves that year after they traded Jimmy Butler, it was like full bore, like Cat and Rocco, like, out trapping and scrambling. The first, I think the first game was against Kemba Walker and the Hornets. And they just, and I was like, oh, you know, this is so aggressive. And it worked. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history there, in that Rocco's knee blows up, or he like gets hurt. He misses a little bit of time. Maybe comes back for like one or two games and then is shut down.
Yeah. There was another one of these little mini segments the year, no, a couple years before. It was Tibbs's first year here after the All-Star break.
Okay.
And just, I think they had, or Britt might remember, but they had like, they came out like gangbusters after the All-Star break. Remember how disappointing the Tibbs start was? Like, they were like, they were like 8-25 or something. It was like, oh shit, this isn't any better than it ever was. But they played really well after the All-Star break, and Beal Itza was way more involved. And then he got hurt.
Okay.
And it was one of these things where, like, they lost one kind of bigger player, and then they lost all their games to finish that year. And that's how they got Chris Dunn. They moved like way up the draft. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it was another situation where it's like, you got kind of a, like a 6'10 forward next to Cat with some beef to him. And Gorgui Dieng was probably getting more minutes back then too. And his defensive numbers.
Starting maybe.
Yeah. His defensive numbers were always relatively good on the Wolves, but
it's just so like fascinating that we have all of these years and like, don't really know what the best way to defend with Cat is. Right.
I mean, we have theories.
I feel pretty strongly about my theories, but like, it's just what's, again, bizarre about the Rosa's tenure is they only tried one thing.
Yeah.
They only tried like mini ball next to Cat, and, you know, and it failed. And so it's why it's so curious to me of like, is Chris Finch and Elston Turner the new defensive coordinator guy? Are they going to be able to like figure this out with Cat at the five? Or is the answer that you can't have a good defense with Cat as your five?
I think
that might be an answer too.
I sometimes will write this or kind of repeat it, but I think there's a kind of pretty clear relationship between Towns' offensive emphasis and role and his defensive performance. Like,
totally.
Like, in particular, the transition stuff, which is always a problem. When he's down on the block and he's working hard against, sometimes against defenders who are bigger and stronger than him, and he falls over a lot, and he's looking at the refs, like, he's not a good defender in those moments. Whereas if he was like a little more Dirk Nowitzki, late career Kevin Garnett-ish, where he's at the top of the key more often, not working quite so hard, not quite as involved in like the direct action, but he might just get more jump shots. Like,
It just makes sense, right?
And he's like, back on, if he's going to be, and get him back on D. Yeah. So I'd like to see
if he's going
to
be the focal point. Yeah. If he's going to be the focal point of the offense, like, it's kind of hard to
be,
it's kind of asking a lot to ask him to be
the defensive
super physical
center anchor. Yeah. No, I mean, there are a couple guys like Embiid probably does it, and Giannis does it for the most part, I think. But Towns isn't those guys physically. I think he's not going to ever. And even those guys, you know, there's always health questions with Embiid, you know, the toll he takes. It's hard to know how long his career will be. But at the end of the day, that guy can hang out on the block on both ends and be just a menace. But I see some people now with Ben Simmons' name always in the news. I see people saying, like, I wonder how Embiid will be when Simmons isn't there to kind of support their D. So that's a little footnote to that part of it.
Well, but maybe let's use it as a segue. Let's use it as a segue to talk some actual Ben Simmons. Yeah. Let me take a quick break here. I'll bring you right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, back with Andy Grimsrud. We've been talking about his article at PunchDrunkWolves.com about recapping the Gerson Rosas regime. Check that out. We hit on the nuts and bolts of it. You had some other exposures of faux culture and all those sorts of things that people could go read into that. But obviously, I think a big question right now for, oddly, with the season set to start like Tuesday.
Yeah.
The question I think a lot of people have about the roster is like, is it done? You know, normally we're like, okay, this is the group. Like, let's estimate what the starting lineups are, the rotations, this and that. That all seems to be buried, obviously, by this massive news bubble.
Yeah.
But also this, like, you know, this looming Ben Simmons thing that is, you know, going to continue to loom to some degree and probably come to some sort of a head on Monday with him choosing to show up at training camp or not. And I think that's really when, if he doesn't show up, whether it's the Timberwolves or somebody else, that's when this action is going to start. So I guess that's all my way of saying, like, where are you at on the Ben Simmons front? What do you want to see happen? And where do you feel that this is going?
You know, I kind of joked about this on Twitter, but it's kind of like daily different thoughts. I have a hard time maintaining a strict Ben Simmons take, because I'm kind of back and forth between the excitement of what a Towns Edwards Simmons core could generate. I mean, if there's some chemistry there and they get some decent role players to fill in the blanks, I mean, that put, like, the all-star potential of all three guys, that could be a top, that could be a championship core. It could be. I'm not saying it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be this year, I don't think, but it could be in like maybe 1 to 3 years. Like Simmons and Cat in particular, you can almost set Edwards to the side.
I mean, you need Edwards to take a step towards Luka.
You do. You need Edwards to be the late game shot creator guy, because it obviously ain't Simmons, and Cat's kind of not really that either because of his size and just the position he plays. But like Simmons, Cat for, you know, just say the first 40 minutes of the game. I mean, the offensive perfect, like, chemistry with Simmons being just a bull of a guy who can get inside and just overwhelm people. but maybe doesn't finish. It doesn't want to shoot the ball. Well, Cat maybe needs to do a little more shooting and a little less pretending to be the strongest guy in the gym. Like we just talked about, you know, Cat, if you want Cat on the top of the team more, well, maybe you get like the most physically impressive ball handler in the league to be his sidekick. So super excited about what that would look like. But at the same time, you know, there's a reason that teams aren't putting their best offers out. I mean, Ben Simmons had a horrible playoffs and can't shoot, doesn't shoot. Like personality wise, I'm not totally sure. I frankly, I haven't followed some of the celebrity girlfriend stuff. Like there's a lot of like kind of funny chatter about Simmons. I'm not fully up on. I'm not totally sure what kind of guy he is. Like I'm losing trust in Towns as a guy who I think is going to want to be here. And like, if we get two of our three guys,
two question marks.
Yeah. Right. I have enough fear that the whole thing just kind of would flop and flop relatively quickly. That I don't want to see like four first round picks go out the door. I kind of just think two first rounders, you probably got to just really painfully say goodbye to Jaden McDaniels. And then whatever else salary wise, but
that's like the interesting part. And, you know, something I talk about a lot is I think, and you talked about kind of in your article too, where this team has been there for a while now, kind of needs to decide if they're trying to win with Cat now or move into another window that is, you know, the quote unquote rebuild, right? The good part is like if you're taking that rebuild path, it's already underway when you have Ant and Jaden McDaniels, in the fold. Plus, like the idea that if you do need to like cut bait with Cat, like you're going to get a bunch back from him. And so Ant plus Jaden plus like a bunch of Cat, like that's attractive too. Mm-hmm. It's I think the basketball fit of Ben Simmons is like really slept on. Mm-hmm. I think I just generally fall on the gradient of like he's a lot better than what I see people putting him out there as, just generally as of how good he is. I think his fit with Cat, as we talk about the question marks about the defense, like you answer a lot of those with Ben Simmons. But even as somebody who's very into Ben Simmons, like by trading for Ben Simmons, you have now leaned into the Cat and D'Lo window, which I'm not totally against that.
Unless D'Lo's out in the deal, which...
Yeah, you're right. I guess
there's like a 50% chance he probably would be. I don't know.
Right. I guess
window.
I would
put... Cat window for sure.
The cat window. The more mature window, the more now window, right? Yep. And I know everyone's like, man, what we got to do now? It's been forever, yada, yada, yada. I just like... I would have some fear because like you said, if it does flame out, then, you know, we've lost Jaden McDaniels in the process, you know, picks in the process. And that rebuild side of it, it is, if things flop, it's not as good. It's only Anthony Edwards, which is still a lot.
Yep.
But that it's kind of weird. Like, I know this isn't possible, but just with like the variables out there right now, if we could magically sort of move them around in a way that wouldn't make sense in a trade. But if you could get it so it's Ben Simmons, Anthony Edwards, and Jaden McDaniels all on the team, like,
yeah,
I love that.
That's an interesting idea. I barely even that's almost not crossed my mind, but it did the other day, and I kind of thought I would probably do that. You know, Simmons has 4 years left on his deal, which is kind of, I mean, that's one more than Towns, right?
One more than Towns, yeah.
One more than Towns, and like pass more of a natural passer. More of a defender, which I think Ant could benefit from playing with. You know, I agree with what you're saying.
If you're doing that, it's not just Ant plus Jaden plus Simmons. It's also Cat liquidated, right? So it's Ant plus Jaden plus Simmons plus whatever Cat brings back.
Right.
Now you're going to have given out something in the process to get Simmons. And again, this isn't going to work because it's But you know, if I'm just sitting here like. I kind of like the fit of that and what the asset, you know, reasonably estimating what it would have cost to get Simmons and Cat. It's not like fantasy football or like your DraftKings lineup where you like take out 5,800 and put in whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's like, that to me is a cool middle between the Ant Jaden rebuild thing and the all in on the cat window now sort of deal. That probably isn't possible, but as we've been sitting here for many months of like nothingness on this other than maybe Ben Simmons, it's like your mind starts to wander and that's where mine's gone to.
No, I think that is an interesting thought experiment, even if it's probably not likely that they'd go that route. But to sort of jump back to like my gripes with Rosas's first moves and gutting the roster of those veterans, like the really unsexy part of a cat trade might be getting a couple of those types along with, you know, your centerpiece type. Like the guts of a cat trade would involve like one shiny new object, you know, a young player with upside and picks. But then you might, you know, contract filler wise, you might be able to get some guys, preferably ones that have more than like an expiring contract, who actually could round out a real NBA rotation to give a little infrastructure for Jaden and Ant to play basketball with. So they're not, Ant's not kicking the ball out to Josh Okogie. I'm just to make one example of a guy whose offense is real not good. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
it wouldn't hurt to have like a Morris twin standing there once in a while to just catch and shoot. You know what I mean? Just make it feel like you're supported by NBA players more than some of these guys have been. I don't know. I think they've overloaded.
Well, it's the idea of building like more linearly than exponentially, right? Like the Rosa's plan was very clearly like, you know, don't waste any assets or money on a Morris twin, right? Like instead get Jordan Bell and Noah Vonleh for nothing, right?
Yeah.
And do that and have them maybe be 70% of that, which they ended up obviously not being. And I do think it's that honestly, that was probably a bigger disagreement I had with you at the time was just like, keep competence in place. And I was like, what does competence matter if you're going to be bad, no matter what? But the argument for competence is that development, right?
Yeah.
It's the, in that situation, it was in Cat's development coming into his prime. And in this situation with Ant and Jaden, it's like, you know, if you don't put some competence around them, then it's kind of like Wiggins and LaVine back in the day.
Yeah.
Right. And
you're going to win 1 out of 10 or something. I mean, you know, maybe more than that.
They're just overexposed a little bit.
Yeah. The best you're going to get is a good quarter, maybe two. And you're gonna lose the game if it's against a decent team. And it wasn't that bad the last 2 years. It wasn't as bad as the Wiggins LaVine. That was an admirable tank job. I mean, that was that was top to bottom. I mean, that was like we got two high schoolers here. We're gonna more or less, you know, they're teenagers, and we're gonna just
play them out of position,
throw them out there with Justin Hamilton and see how it goes. But
Lorenzo Brown.
Hey, he got Towns out of it, so he got a return on his investment. That's why teams tank. But
I do think that I think both Anthony Edwards and Jade McDaniels would kind of struggle in that environment, because I think Ant would end up taking so much of the pie that he does have a propensity to get inefficient, right?
Yeah.
Like I think if it was like, you know, full rebuild around those two, mm-hmm. I don't think Ant's shooting numbers would end up being very good. I think, and then with Jaden, you know, not that we can learn all that much from Summer League, but like we probably got to kind of let go of the Jaden's going to be this, his own independent, like shot creator star in that sort of way. What Jaden is great at is being like an elite role player who, you know, you want him to be able to put the ball on the floor a little bit, but like he's probably, I don't know. And you know, you never want to say never. I think Jaden McDaniels would struggle if he ran like 250 high pick and rolls this year.
Yeah.
Right. As the ball handler.
But would he come out of it 5 years later looking like a 6'9" Zach LaVine, maybe? No, I'm just kidding. I mean, but sort of what they did with LaVine. We're like, this guy's a freak.
It is.
This guy's a freak. Give him the ball and just let him learn.
Yeah. And I do think that it's weird. I oddly haven't really thought about Ant and Jaden versus Wiggins and LaVine.
Yeah.
Which is oddly kind of similar.
Yeah, actually, because you're just, I haven't really either, to be honest, but you're right.
We're so distracted by Cat, I guess, now that we've like magically traded Cat off of this team. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, but they are different because, LaVine is a one-way player and McDaniels isn't,
yeah,
right? When it comes to fruition, which maybe like takes away some ceiling from McDaniels that, you know, that Zach looks like he's, you know, trending towards, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe we're dipping too far into like that path, but I go back to this idea that I like both paths, which is every other time that major dysfunction has kind of like hit the Timberwolves, right? We're like, okay, dysfunction and like, do we have to clear the roster all over? Like the Tibbs time, do we have to trade Taj Gibsons and Jeff Teagues and Gorgie Jenks and all that? Like the good part in these really dark Timberwolves times is like the roster's pretty ready to go, right?
Yeah.
Like in one direction or the other, just standing pat is even not going to be that bad either.
It should be okay. Yeah, I agree. This isn't a depressing time. And the Rosas news in terms of as a Wolves fan, like I listened to you and Britt's pod from the other day, and I sensed Britt was pretty, like his knee jerk reaction was kind of to be just a little distraught about it. Like in terms of how just terrible the timing was, but I don't think I think the only thing that it does potentially compromise, which I think he talked about or tweeted about, one of the two, is the Simmons trade. I tend to think that could take the Wolves out of the running for it in terms of what will happen.
What
do you think?
I'll say that was my initial inclination.
Yeah.
But just from talking to people, like, no, I think it's like,
still going.
It's not live right now. Like nothing's live with Simmons right now, but it's gonna get live on Monday for the Timberwolves or for anybody if Simmons doesn't show up. Like everyone, as I understand it, is just waiting for that.
Yeah.
And Daryl Morey's over there playing chicken with, you know, with Simmons and Clutch.
Yeah.
And I think he's gonna lose that game of chicken, and you know, and Simmons isn't gonna come, and if not. Like this is like reporting anything crazy. It's kind of what everyone's assumed the whole time, right? Like then the Sixers lose some leverage.
Yeah.
Then the price drops down to a point where, again, not just the Timberwolves, but another team might be able to get Ben Simmons for a package they feel more comfortable with making. And for the Timberwolves, you know, a package that they might feel more willing to make that doesn't like, I mean, no matter what happens, like you said, it's going to hurt some.
Yeah.
Like even if the Sixers lose some leverage, like Jaden McDaniels is probably going out in the deal, along with pick, you know, it's going to hurt some, but it's a lot different than like a load, right? Like paying the full boat for him. And if we get to Monday, the full boat option is off, but I would, you know, it's a fascinating situation for Sasha Gupta, right?
Yeah. I think they're going to empower Sash and Gupta to do the job. When the rubber meets the road or whatever you're supposed to say, like say that Philly opens the door to a Wolves trade and it's a big ask. Because from what I can hear from people like you and John and everyone, I don't get the sense there's even been an offer with the Wolves to this point. Do you sense there has been an offer presented to the Timberwolves, or is it maybe just the reverse? Like maybe we've made.
Yeah, I don't. No, I don't think there has been an offer presented to the Wolves.
It doesn't seem like it. But like, let's just.
And that's not just the Wolves. That's like everywhere. Like Morey hasn't.
He's probably made one for Damian Lillard. Probably.
Oh yeah. Outside of Damian Lillard and Bradley Beal, that's what they've been holding off for the whole time.
But like, let's just say hypothetically, like things aren't going anywhere with Portland. They make it clear we're going, you know, this is our team, blah, blah, blah. And like nothing's going with Beal. And they say, okay, Timberwolves, you know, like D'Angelo Russell, Jaden McDaniels, four first round picks and two first round pick swaps. Like, does Gupta have the ability to do a trade like that without heavy involvement from like Lori and A-Rod and everyone. Like, I'm not sure. I have a
I'll say two things to that.
That's a franchise shaking trade. Like, the next guy you want to hire may not take the job if he doesn't have his next four picks.
It's not going to be four. It's not going to be all that. But as Mark Stein reported today, and you know, I've heard this as well, like Mark Lurie wants to be splashy. And that was what Stein reported today was that they pursued Masai Ujiri this summer, even offered him like a stake in ownership to, you know,
I missed that report.
That part might not have been in it, but
yeah, no,
they pursued Masai Ujiri they wanted him. I mean, what I'm trying to say is like, they want to like go.
Yeah.
Like they want to have studs in the front office and studs on the roster, which, you know, everyone wants to.
Yeah.
But I think what people should glean from this, you know, this pursuit or want for a high-end executive is they also, you know, they have a want to bring in, you know, high-level players too. So I don't think it's going to be one of those things where if Sashin has what he deems to be a fair deal that does sacrifice future assets, I don't think Mark Lurie's going to be sitting there blocking it.
You know what you just made that whole that whole description just made me think of was when the Russian guy took over the Nets.
Prokhorov.
He wanted to be splashy, and so what is he? I mean, they were making some of the worst trades. I think he had a general manager.
Darren Williams.
I mean,
that was KG and Pierce.
KG and Pierce was a horrible one. I mean, they ended up getting Celtics got some studs out of that. Probably Brown and Tatum. Maybe I can't remember how the order went, but the Nets wanted to be like splashy and the new owners. And it's like, oh man, you can do some bad things when that's the mantra.
Right. Well, that's what we don't know about A-Rod and Laurie. I mean, you'd like to think that they're, you know, that there's going to be some guardrails there.
Yeah.
And I think like right now, like the only guardrail is Sashin Gupta.
Yeah.
There's nobody else there.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Ethan Kasson's the CEO right now.
Right.
But we're also in a situation where it's very possible that A-Rod and Laurie come in and replace everything.
Right. No, that's true.
So are the guardrails lame ducks? Like, what does that do when you're in a negotiation process as well? So it's very strange
that it's very strange that the Timberwolves are now owned by Alex Rodriguez. I mean, can I just say that? I mean, like the most famous baseball player of my life, probably. I mean, top three anyway. Like, what?
Is that even like top three strangest thing that's happened since the season ended? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it might be top five, top six. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the Timberwolves, man. They're weird.
Yeah. Like,
but, you know, I don't think, I mean, my opinion on it is you could have, you know, concerns that A-Rod and Lurie are going to be Prokhorov. Like, sure, we don't know. I guess that's possible. But I view it as, you know, Glenn out replaced by anyone is very likely to be an upgrade.
Right.
And now the weird part is that's not clear. Like, there's still two more years on all that part of it. What's the autonomy level?
Yeah, he's already been sued by his minority owners. I think that's done, right? Didn't they dismiss that or something?
See, that's another crazy that we forgot about from over the past 5 months. Like, exactly. So, I don't know. I am personally, as the guy who said I was like blinded by the light of Gerson Rosas at the beginning, personally, I'm very intrigued by Mark Lurie. The times I've talked to him, he seems really sharp. Like, he doesn't necessarily know basketball ins and outs well. But I think like ownership can be a huge advantage in sports. I think he has the potential to be that.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, even outside of like personally getting to know Sashin Gupta some, like I've been a fan of the idea of the process and what was going down there 8 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever that is now. And just kind of that, like I was saying, that like theory of winning on the margins, not necessarily like tanking to get all the way back, but the modern Sam Hinkie style of building, like Sashin Gupta was there for that. I think I don't. They really want to get a Masai Ujiri or a crazy top executive when they might just have one.
Yeah, get like, the next one. I mean, it's not like Masai Ujiri was clearly going to be that. I mean,
or what about, you know, what about Sam Presti back in the day? Like that was the same thing. He just kind of gets elevated into it. Tim Connolly, like these are who's the Denver's GM. Like sometimes these the best guys are, you know, they're younger. They grow into the position. And I don't know, like Sashin's coming in under fire, but personally, from what I can gather, like I don't know. You could be in a much worse position right now, giving somebody else the reins to this after needing to fire your president of basketball operations. Like
I kind of feel like
I kind of like it.
I like his pedigree and what he's where he comes from as far as all that. But I in trying to just think about what has worked for the Wolves, like I've you know this because you can tick off all the ones that you know to varying degrees failed. It's almost everybody, you know, in some respects, you know, like obviously you could say Rosas, Tibbs, Khan, McHale. I mean, they like in various ways and to various degrees, they all kind of failed. But like what has worked, and I feel like what's worked has been, you know, big like basketball people with some credibility, like Flip Saunders, when he and McHale started, I think they were a pretty credible duo. McHale, I think, probably got lazy at the job and let the game sort of pass him over time. But I think he and Flip, when they showed up, were very in tune with what the NBA was. And they were a huge, huge profile, especially McHale. And I think when Flip came back, he had a presence about him that commanded a lot of respect and credibility, you know, here and around the league. And I don't know who that would be now. I don't know if Garnett could come back. That's the name everyone's going to always bring up when these things happen. But
how about just like any influence from a former player? Like, obviously you don't want to hire Charles Barkley to like run your organization, right? Yeah. Like, and like the whole pass them by, the games pass them by sort of thing. We do this thing where, you know, the former pro athletes, they don't get today's game. But a thing that Jace Frederick pointed out to me at one point over the time, he's like, you ever think about how like Rosa's entire front office has like no former player, nobody with any actual basketball
experience? That's kind of what I was getting at without saying it that way, but that's kind of what I'm saying. Like Gupta isn't going to fit check that box it wouldn't hurt.
But
to get,
he might be somebody who's willing to do that.
Right. No, if they could, like, I think a figurehead who has meaningful input, you know what I'm saying? Like not someone who cares about the minutiae, like leave that to the folks like Satch and Gupta and his staff, but somebody who like what Larry Bird did, or, I don't know, there's several examples. I'm not going to remember them all, but you know, somebody who brings, because this is
just like a middle ground, right?
This is
like
a special project. It's not a normal team. Like you gotta, it's not taking over like the Indiana Pacers or the Memphis Grizzlies or something like that. Like there's no good political capital here. There's no trust in the fan base. I mean, it's just been too many things have gone wrong. They need somebody to sort of just kind of bring it together.
And what I will say, what I understand about Sashin is I think he is a listener a lot more than Rosa's was. Like in that, I think his ideal front office is a group of people who are going to like put it all together out, like together in the group. And yes, Sashin has like last call, but I think it'll be the collaboration that Rosa said was going on. It wasn't a collab. He said that because it sounded good to have that. I think that's like who Sashin is a lot more in just being like, let's get all the perspectives here together and make a logical strategic decision, you know, going forward. And so he needs to get the right voices in the room. I don't know who those are. We don't know who those are, but you know, I think that's the optimistic like vision. If this is Sashin's deal, like for, you know, for the future, like, yeah, he's the guy, but Chris Finch has a lot of say. The other people in the front office have a lot of say, And, you know, a fatal flaw of the last two regimes is Tibbs had too much power and Rosas had too much power.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So balance that out a little bit, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, don't do anything crazy, because Rosas, at that trade deadline, Rosas took over and was the full-on czar of this team. He gave up more for D'Angelo Russell than the rest of the people in the front office that, like, agreed to do so for. As terms of protections, that other second round pick they put in there, taking back players that pushed them into the luxury tax, all that.
Yeah.
Same thing goes for, like, they had agreed on walkaway numbers on Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez, and Gerson decided that, you know, it was worth it to go higher. And you know, obviously that was not a good move with Juancho, but it might have been smart with Malik. Yeah. Like, Malik's been really good at basketball in his time here. But that's, like, kind of when we say there was – that isn't, like, dysfunction. That's just kind of more power. A lot of people in that front office have not had say for a while. It's been one person acting independently, and that sounds a lot like the Tibbs era and a lot of what sunk Tibbs ultimately. You know, whether that's right or wrong, I just think that's what – as I understand it, that's what – you know, both of them did. So it's going to be fascinating, man. I mean, we'll see what, like, Sasha's going to be put in the fire on Monday. Yeah. And, like, holy cow. We'll see if A-Rod and Lori can, like, provide a distraction or something in the morning. You know, hopefully Ant brings, like, all of his pets and those are distracting or whatever, but here we go. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Always is.
Well, Andy, I appreciate you doing this, and everybody, we kind of talked about his article, but Andy lays it out well as a rational Tibbs stan, I would say, and it is article. Check that out at punchdrunkwolves.com. Obviously, follow Andy on Twitter at PDWolves. I hope to see you at games this season.
Yeah, I hope to be at some. Probably not as many as I used to, but I hope to still be around.
Well, we'll see what that whole access world you know, looks like this year too. I don't think we'll be in the locker rooms, but just fun. You know, it's, as you know, it's a different perspective when you're sitting there at the games where we sat, you know, next to the bench. You pick up on some stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you doing it, Andy. I'll talk to you soon. Again, follow Andy there. I'm Dane at Dane Moore NBA. I will talk to you on Media Day. Until then, peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, don't let standards ever bring you down, hope you dancing like nobody else around,